I'm Jyotha Gupta, and this is The Pulse. Long-term disability benefits provide financial support when you are unable to work either due to illness or injury. These plans are usually managed by insurance companies or through workplace plans. Long-term disability benefits can help you manage daily living expenses and can also offer financial stability when your health is on the decline. Yet applying for LTD can itself prove to be a challenging process for those who wish to apply. Those who want to apply have questions about eligibility, documentation, and the application process, which can seem like a bit of a maze. The process can culminate in disappointment for many people who, despite paying insurance premiums for years, find their claims denied. Today, we discuss the ins and outs of long-term disability claims. It's time to put your finger on the pulse. Hello and welcome to The Pulse on AMI Audio. I'm Jyotha Gupta, joining you from my home in downtown Toronto. I've noticed that the shows we do about the disability tax credit and other financial matters tend to be very popular, and I can certainly understand why. And one of the things that I've long been told is confusing for people to understand and overwhelming for people to comprehend is the claims process for long-term disability benefits. A lot of people have questions such as, what are they? Who's eligible? How do I apply? What do I do if I get denied? Well, to help us answer those questions and more, I'm joined today by Sivan Tumarkin, who is a disability lawyer and the national co-managing partner of Sinferu Tumarkin LLP. He specializes in disability insurance law and personal injury law. Sivan, hello, and thank you so much for joining us on The Pulse today.
Thank you for having me.
Very briefly, what is long-term disability and who would be eligible for it? So what are some of the situations where someone might be able to get a long-term disability claim?
Long-term disability is a non-governmental insurance policy. It's underwritten by insurance companies Sun Life. There's a variety of them, Great West Life. There are many insurance companies that provide those. And those are policies that are provided either to employees as part of a group health benefits plan, or individuals can purchase them directly, either by contacting the insurance company or by going through a broker. And to your second question as to what kind of conditions will qualify you for long-term disability, there is really a wide range of conditions. The question is, are you physically or psychologically disabled, or a mixture of the two? And as a result of that disability, or as a result of multiple disabilities, are you unable to perform the essential tasks of your own occupation? That's the first test. So if you cannot work as a result of a condition, and it can be anything from cancer to depression to long COVID to any kind of condition you can think of where you have a doctor or healthcare practitioner saying that as a result of that condition or injury, you're unable to work, then that would qualify you for long-term disability.
A lot of people have heard about workers' compensation, and maybe on TV they've heard about lawyers, you know, those jingles about personal injury law. How is long-term disability different from a personal injury claim or from workers' compensation for that matter?
So let's deal with the first one, personal injury. In a personal injury context, somebody has been injured, again, either psychologically or physically or a combination of the two, as a result of someone's negligence. The first type of accident that comes to mind is a car accident or a slip and fall or anything like that where someone has caused someone else injury. And what would happen at that point, the individual will start a legal action against whoever caused the accident and would seek compensation for that. Long-term disability is very different than that. Long-term disability is not a claim for negligence. It's essentially an application to the insurance company saying that under the insurance policy that I have, again, either through my lawyer, through my health benefits plan, or my own private policy, I am unable to work. Therefore, I've satisfied the test under the policy to receive long-term disability benefits. Workers' compensation is a governmental program that essentially allows individuals who have been injured during the course of their employment, typically, to recover, again, any number of things, either money for treatments or income replacement benefits. There's a variety of benefits. But the distinguishing feature between the two, really, is that WSIB or WCB in other jurisdictions in Canada, those are through a government entity, WSIB, workers' compensation, as opposed to LTD, which is run by private insurance companies.
Now, if long-term disability is run by private insurance companies, does it matter where in the country you're living? Would somebody in Quebec have a very different system compared to somebody who lives in Ontario, for instance?
It's an excellent question. You certainly have long-term disability claims in Quebec, but because Quebec is a province that is governed by the civil code, we call it the civil code as opposed to the common law, such as the rest of the country, then the law there is different. It doesn't mean you can't recover for long-term disability benefits. Certainly you can apply, and you do have coverage for long-term disability, again, much like in Ontario and BC and other provinces. If you have a dispute with your insurance company, you will need to seek legal advice and legal help from someone who is qualified under the civil code, who is called to the bar in Quebec as opposed to somebody who's in Ontario, just because those are two separate systems of law, and a lawyer from one province cannot help someone from the other province.
Now, let's say you have long-term disability provided as a benefit through a workplace group insurance plan and you want to avail yourself of that long-term disability benefit. Where do you start? Do you go to the human resources department of your company or do you go directly to the insurance company?
Either or. When somebody contacts me and tells me I have difficulty, I need to apply for long-term or incidentally short-term disability, because many plans also have short-term disability as well, I tell them, contact your HR department. And if they tell me that either they don't have an HR department or they don't know who to speak to or HR is not playing ball with them, I tell them, well, okay, in that case, make sure you have your benefits booklet so you know which insurance company insures you and go to the insurance company directly. There is no one single route, but the most convenient route under most circumstances, it's simply to contact HR or the head of the company or whoever deals with these kinds of issues at your company, and they should be able to give you the proper forms or put you in touch with the right people at the insurance company to make the application.
Now, I understand this is just conjecture on my part, and I'm basing it off of anecdotal evidence. No one's done a study on this, but just from talking to a lot of people, one of the things that I've heard is that a number of HR departments are actually reluctant to have people put in claims for long-term disability, fearing that their insurance premiums will go up. Is this just conjecture on my part, or is there some truth to it? Because you must be seeing a lot of people who have come to you presumably after having talked to HR and not gotten the support that they needed.
It's not conjecture. You're absolutely right. I can tell you the majority of HR managers, individuals of companies who are tasked with helping employees through these difficult times, they do help employees because, you know, the purpose of long-term disability is to provide a safety net for individuals who need some time to recover from whatever is impeding their ability to work. And so if we use logic here, for an HR company to simply not provide the proper support, not help the employee get the help they need from the insurance company, all they're doing is creating a situation where the person is going to continue being not able to work. They don't have the space. They don't have the ability to take time off, do what their doctors are telling them to do, and recuperate. But it's not conjecture. And what I tell people, if that happens, number one, we have employment lawyers on our staff, and so we can help them with that. But I also tell them, look, when you were first employed, generally the company gives you a benefits booklet or information about your benefits. That information, that either piece of information or booklet, is going to contain the information for the insurance company that's providing you with this coverage. You can contact them directly. You don't have to go through HR. And, you know, at the end of the day, if they still have problems, we can help them with that, but we would rather give them the advice they need so that they can deal with this directly, because anytime it goes through lawyers, then it just prolongs the process. We are the last resort. But no, it's not conjecture, to answer your question, but there are ways of dealing with HR professionals or companies that are putting roadblocks. And at the end of the day, saving money or for the insurance company not to have its premiums go up, well, why did they provide the benefits in the first place if that was a concern? It makes no sense.
Exactly. I know there must be a great deal of variation because no two cases are identical, but if you had to give me a ballpark, on average, how long does it get for someone to get their claims accepted at, you know, their long-term disability claims? So is it a matter of weeks or months between when somebody puts in an application for long-term disability and when they get a decision from the insurance company?
You're absolutely right. No two cases are the same, but in my experience, it typically takes a few weeks. It also depends on filling out the application correctly, and I think we'll get to that, and the documentation that you need to provide, because there are ways, I think, to speed up the process and make sure that you really are doing everything you can to give the insurance company what it needs, not to have to come back to you five times, which prolongs the process unnecessarily.
Let's talk a little bit about the application process, including the documentation requirements. Can you walk us through what filling out the application actually entails and what sort of documentation someone needs to provide?
Absolutely. And this is really important because oftentimes that's where we see the majority of holdups or denials, frankly, which can be devastating for the individual that is seeking that safety net. So number one, you want to make sure that your primary care physician, whether it's your family doctor or if you're experiencing some other ailment or injury where you have a specialist, whoever is most equipped, I would say, to comment about your inability to work because of your disabling condition, that's the person you need help from. And that person will need to fill out a form. It's not a large form. And they need to essentially explain what it is that is ailing you. What's the prognosis? What the treatment's recommendations are? When they think you may or may not be able to go back to work, etc. One of the things I tell people oftentimes is that doctors, while they can be very, very good and knowledgeable in their field, they don't really understand LTD. And so imagine a situation where a doctor provides a lot of medical information to the insurance company, but doesn't answer a critical question, which is the person able to go back to work? And if not at the present time, why not? And so the advice I give people is, other than speaking with your doctor about this and making sure that they're on board with you taking time off, because you don't want a situation where the doctor fills out the paperwork, says, yes, you have a disabled condition, but no, you don't need time off. That's sure to get you a denial. You need your doctor on board. You need your doctor to agree that you need time off. And you need your doctor to spell out in no uncertain terms what the issues are and why is it that you're unable to perform the tasks of your employment. And if you have that, then typically, yeah, you should be able to qualify and get long-term disability benefits.
Are there other ways in which someone might find that they've been disqualified? I'm thinking about lifestyle, like let's say someone is a smoker or even a pre-existing health condition that might unwittingly throw a wrench in the works.
It's an excellent question. Lifestyle, that's a broad description, but I think I'm going to include in that lifestyle category things like what happens if you're an alcoholic? And that alcoholism is what prevents you from working because, I mean, that is a disability. It's recognized under the Human Rights Code. So there are conditions that the insurance company may come back and say, no, that disqualifies you because either, as you mentioned, number one, it's a pre-existing condition, meaning you had that before we insured you. And number two, it's simply an exclusion under the policy. There are two ways to answer this. Number one, insurance companies, unfortunately, will seek to deny claims. I mean, if you think about how the insurance company industry operates, the whole idea, the whole premise of it is to collect as much premium as they can from individuals or companies and then not pay out. It's not just disability, by the way. That's house insurance, travel insurance. It's all kinds of insurance. That's the way insurance works. And so they will try to find a way not to pay you, and they will use pre-existing conditions as a reason. They will also say to you that they don't have sufficient medical documentation supporting your inability to work, supporting your disability. They may give you a number of reasons that they believe would disqualify you. But I will tell you that typically when somebody comes to us and says, I've been disqualified because of a pre-existing condition, I've been disqualified because I haven't provided sufficient documentation, or any number of reasons, in the vast majority of cases, when we actually review the medical documentation and review the application, we often find that the insurance company has either made mistakes or blatantly deciding not to honor the insurance policy that they should. And so can they disqualify and do they disqualify under various reasons, including pre-existing conditions? Yes, but in many instances, those decisions by the insurance companies are simply not valid. it can be challenged.
And so how do you challenge it? Is there a way to put in an appeal or take the insurance company to a regulator? What's the next step if someone has been met with a denial?
So there are multiple ways to do this. When an insurance company provides you with a denial, the letter of denial or email, which typically it's a letter, will contain the reasons for denial. They'll review the documentation, they'll contain reasons for the denial, and then at the bottom of the letter, they'll have one or two paragraphs that say, you are entitled to appeal this decision. You have X amount of time to appeal. Here's what you need to do. Provide us with additional documentation. Now, that paragraph appears very formal, and it provides this aura of kind of formality and makes you think, like, this is going to a regulator or this is going to a third party. It's not true. It's essentially getting appealed. You're sending your appeal, your request for reconsideration to the exact same company that denied you in the first place. One of the things over the years, for many, many years, that I have asked insurance companies and have yet to receive is the statistics on their end, which I'm sure they have, of how many of these appeals are actually successful. And they don't want to provide that. They give me different reasons why they don't want to provide that. My suspicion, my opinion, is because it's a very low number where they have reversed their decision. So what is the alternative then? Sure, you can appeal. You can take your time and do that. And we can talk about that. But there is a much more powerful way of doing this, and that is the legal process. And there is a reason for that. Because once a legal process is initiated against the insurance company, and incidentally, I'm talking to somebody who used to work for insurance companies. Once that legal process gets initiated, the insurance company internally is now looking at the case very differently. Internally now, the insurance company has a different adjuster dealing with this, an adjuster that deals with legal claims. And now they have to generally appoint a lawyer, either in-house or a lawyer from the outside. And so now, in a way, they're bleeding money. In other words, now they have to spend money defending this legal case. And at that situation, unlike an appeal, which is an internal process, if this matter is not resolved, this legal matter is not resolved, well, then the end conclusion is court. I can tell you unequivocally that almost no LTD case goes to court. And in my opinion, the reason for that is because insurance companies understand that if this goes to court and you have the medical backing and the treating doctors agree that the person is disabled, the insurance company will be hit not only with a judgment against it, but also potentially with punitive damages. And that's happened. Not to mention that it's a bad decision out there. And, you know, from a PR standpoint, it's not good for them. And so, yes, you can appeal these denials. They will give you some timeline. But the reality is that a much more powerful way of dealing with this is through the legal process, because that's when they really take you seriously. They understand that if they don't settle with you, they're going to go before a judge. And then the gloves are off. At that point, they can end up paying a lot more than they would otherwise have to pay you if they just simply approved your claim.
So is it that in more cases than not, the legal process almost acts like a pressure tactic on the insurance company, where the company's been put in a position where they have to decide whether it's worth it for them to continue to defend this claim and to spend money on lawyers, etc., rather than just simply to pay out the claim? But for the cases that do end up in court, because I'm sure there are some, how long does it usually take to get a judgment, and what kind of costs are we talking about when we open a legal proceeding against an insurance company? Because to the average person, it does seem like a bit of a David and Goliath situation where you're taking on a pretty large company with deep pockets and you're just an individual who's struggling with their health.
You said a few things which are extremely important, and I want to start from the last point, which is it's a David and Goliath battle. And you are absolutely right. And I, in fact, use that analogy myself when I speak with people. And I often remind people, who won that battle between David and Goliath? And people are very intimidated by insurance companies. And I understand why. These are multi-billion dollar entities. But they didn't become multi-billion dollar entities by taking on these legal claims to courts. They simply did not. And now you started your question by saying that is the legal process a pressure tactic? It's a nuclear weapon against an insurance company. And again, I'm talking as someone who used to work for insurance companies. Many lawyers that work on my team used to work for insurance companies. And the reason why this is so powerful, not only do they now have to spend time and money defending their position, which oftentimes, if we are starting this legal claim, it's because we believe there's validity and the person is disabled and should be paid. So not only do we believe in our case, and the insurance company now has to defend itself against a decision, the erroneous decision they've made, but at the same time, they understand that if this goes before a judge, there is a massive chance that they are going to not only have to pay the claim, but they're going to, like I said, have to expend tremendous amount of money defending it, get a very bad reputation in the event that this thing goes south. You know, there was a case, I don't know if it was maybe a year ago or so, against one of the major insurance companies. I can get you the name of the case, where there was not only an award against the insurance company, but it was it also included a pretty big award, a seven-figure award for punitive damages against the insurance company. I believe it was seven figures. It was something substantial. And it's not the first case. There's been many cases like that. Now, how do people afford that? It's a good question as well. Look, personal injury, disability law, that's the area of law that us as lawyers, we're very sensitive to the economics. And so what happens in those cases is we work, certainly my firm does, but we operate on a contingency basis.
Can you explain to us what that means for those of us who don't know what it means to work on contingency?
Of course, the best thing, we work on a percentage. So it's like your realtor selling your house. Unless a realtor sells your house, they don't get paid. It's the same thing for us. And the percentages may vary depending on the type of claim, depending on who we're dealing with. But the key thing to understand, and I'm going to speak about lawyers who don't operate that way in a second. The key thing to understand is that if you are proceeding with a claim on a contingency basis, you're not paying anything up front. The whole idea behind it is that the lawyer, the law firm only gets paid if they are successful. And so there is an incentive on the law firm, if they're telling you that you have a case, to really go after the insurance company and make sure that they advocate for you and get maximum dollar, because however much they get for you, they get a proportion of that. Now, there are lawyers in the disability world that don't work on a percent basis. They will ask you for an upfront retainer. My personal view is that this is completely unjustified. It's unfair. And frankly, I can tell you that most of my colleagues in other firms, whom I respect greatly, they don't work on that basis. They work on a contingency because they understand that people in that predicament who don't have money, who can't work, can't afford to pay them. They have difficult time paying for their mortgage, paying for their kids' education, food, all of that. So contingency essentially means that you don't have to pay anything up front, and the lawyer, the law firm only gets paid if and when the insurance company pays.
I had asked previously if there was some kind of a regulatory body that governs insurance companies, and whether, as an alternative to the legal proceeding, if there was a way that someone could lodge a complaint with this regulatory body, and how effective a strategy that might be.
In my experience, completely ineffective. But to answer your question, you can certainly complain to the ombudsperson. Every insurance company has an ombudsperson. We have the Insurance Bureau of Canada. You can try and lodge a complaint there. But you're dealing with bureaucrats. You're dealing with individuals who, in my experience, my view, don't have an interest really of resolving this. They'll do their investigation. They'll try, I guess, and hear you out. But I was going to say I can count on one hand how many times people have been successful that I'm aware of, but I can't even do that. I can't. I think there's more success with people trying to appeal their decision internally than people going to the insurance bureau or to the ombudsperson. It's just not done that way.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, let's say you are successful in your long-term disability claim, but the company with whom you have an insurance plan closes its doors or is sold to somebody else. What happens to your LTD claim at that stage?
Okay. So the insurance company, so let's say you are on long-term disability. We have that happen to us sometimes where the individual comes to us and we help them get long-term disability, they're getting monthly payments, and then they email or call me in a panicked mood saying, look, I just heard that my employer closed its doors or the company got sold. What's happening? What's going to happen with LTD? The response is very simple. Do not panic. As soon as you get long-term disability, once you're on LTD, it doesn't matter whether or not your employer is still in existence, whether they're operating, whether they've moved to a different jurisdiction, been sold, it doesn't matter, because now your relationship is with the insurance company. This insurance company is going nowhere. Your insurance company is going to continue paying you unless you don't comply with the terms of the policy, or unless you're no longer disabled, etc. So you don't have to worry about your employer going out of business and being sold, because you are now an LTD and it's now between you and the insurance company.
And so is there ever a requirement that you have some kind of a treatment plan, or you show the insurance company that you will eventually be going back to work? Can that be part and parcel of a long-term disability claim?
That's an excellent question. Yes. Under every long-term disability policy, private or through your group benefits, there is going to be a provision that states that you must be engaged in reasonable treatments. And generally what that means is whatever your doctors are telling you you need to do, you need to do. And if you don't comply, keep in mind, the insurance company is going to get copies of your medical records, and it's going to say there whether you're complying or not. And if you're not complying, you would be considered to be in breach of your policy, which would give the insurance company a reason to cut you off. But if you are following treatments, and those treatments can be anything from aggressive treatments to just doing physio at home, or even going to the gym and working out or swimming, things like that, anything your doctors are telling you, anything that you've worked out with your doctors, you need to comply with those. And in terms of work, insurance companies obviously want to stop paying you at some point. And so they do want you to consider a return to work program at some point. And that's something that is really important for you to keep in mind, because at some point, if the insurance company asks you about that, you need to be comfortable. You need to feel that you can, in fact, try to return to work. And as importantly, your doctor or doctors need to feel comfortable with you trying to go back to work. Because sometimes the insurance companies take the position, we think you can go back to work. You or your doctor say you can't. The insurance company cuts you off benefits. Well, they can't do that. They do it sometimes, but they're not allowed to.
One of the things I wanted to ask about, because many people have episodic disabilities, that means that they might have disabilities that are very serious, that prevent them from working. They get long-term disability, then they get better and they go back to work, and then they get sick again and have a disability again. That means that maybe, you know, in a year and a half or 2 years from when they return to work, they again need to take long-term disability. Do they have to go through this whole process all over again? Or is there some kind of a built-in clause that says you'll just get your long-term disability if you have an episodic illness or disability and you don't need to fill out all the paperwork and go through all that process again?
So it does depend on the disability, and it depends on the facts of the disability and, of course, the policy. Insurance companies, or insurance policy, I should say, LTD policies contain a provision generally that's called a recurrence clause. That recurrence clause typically says that if within a certain period of time, and I can tell you typically it's about 6 months, if within that period of time, whatever that is that's under the policy, you've tried to go back to work but are unable to continue, you should be able to go back on LTD essentially immediately. If you're beyond that time period, then you're going to have to reapply. You're going to have to reapply, and you're going to have to provide the medical documentation again, and you're going to go through the whole process and then see what the insurance company says about that. But the majority of people that end up contacting me, when they do have either a situation like you described where it's episodic, or if it's a situation where they thought they were ready to go back but were mistaken, they're actually not ready to go back. Typically, they fall within that time frame that I see, where they should be put back on LTD without any preconditions, without having to wait to get their payments. The LTD payments should snap back into place. Now, I say should, because sometimes insurance companies, again, put obstacles in the way and they hold up those payments, arguing, for instance, that the person hasn't tried hard enough, or maybe they're not as disabled now as they were at the beginning. Again, we deal with all these kinds of cases, but you know, the key thing is that there are these recurrence clauses, these safety nets built in, such that within a certain period of time, if you have to go back on disability, you do not have to go through the entire process again to get that LTD.
We are pretty much out of time. We've covered a lot of ground, but is there anything else you would like to say to us that we haven't had a chance to talk about to help us understand this process a little bit better?
I mean, there's a lot of things we can talk about, but the last thing I want to leave your listeners with is that oftentimes insurance companies are banking on people simply walking away from the benefits that they're owed. And part of that is because that David and Goliath picture that they painted, that people think that they simply have no recourse. There's no way that they can take the insurance company on. And the reality is that that's not the case. Insurance companies, this is a mirage. Insurance companies are there as a safety net, again, much like your home insurance, car insurance, travel insurance. And if you qualify under the policy and you are disabled and your doctors say you're disabled, well, then you should be getting LTD benefits. And if the insurance company says no, you need to seek legal help, because there are ways to force the insurance companies to pay. And it's not as difficult as people think.
If someone wants to get in touch with you, let's say they're listening to this and they have a long-term disability claim that they want to talk about, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So there are various ways. One of the websites that we have, which is very popular, is disabilityrights.ca. There is also a website called ltdfaq.ca, long-term disability frequently asked questions, that actually answers a lot of the questions and covers the topics that we've discussed today in very short, plain English memos, which are completely free for individuals, again, to empower people out there to know how to deal with the insurance companies. But, you know, those two websites, disabilityrights.ca and ltdfaq.ca, those are fantastic.
Sivan, thank you very much for speaking to me about this really important topic. It was a pleasure having you on the program.
My pleasure. It was a pleasure for me as well.
Sivan Tamarkin is a disability rights lawyer, and he talked to us about the long-term disability claims process, which I hope makes a little more sense to you than it did half an hour ago. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I thank you for listening to the program. If you have not already done so, please don't forget to subscribe. And if you have questions or comments, don't forget to leave them down below. And of course, make sure that you do subscribe so you're notified about future videos. I plan to do a couple more about financial matters and topics of interest in the weeks to come. If you have any other feedback, you can write to us at feedback@ami.ca. You can find us on X, formerly Twitter, @AMIAudio. Use the hashtag PulseAMI. You're also able to find me on X @JuithaGupta. And if you'd like to give us a call, you can ring us up at 1-866-509-4545. That's 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to leave permission to play your voicemail on the program. That's all the time we have for today. Our technical producer is Mark Aflalo. Ryan Delahanty is the coordinator for AMI Audio Podcasts. And Andy Frank is the manager for AMI Audio. And I've been your host, Juitha Gupta. Thanks so much for listening.